Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand. And donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This Wednesday is Bell Let's Talk Day, when the telecom giant raises money and awareness for mental health. On that day, Bell will donate 5 cents to mental health initiatives every time you promote their company via text, tweet, or other social media interaction. As they put it, when it comes to mental health, every action counts. The action that we've taken on Bell Let's Talk Day in the past is to point out the ways in which Bell harms people's mental health. In 2016, journalist Karen K. Ho wrote a piece for us titled, "Let's Talk," about how my job at Bell gave me mental health issues and no benefits. Another year, we ran a piece by former Bell Media radio host Maria McLean titled, "Let's Talk About How Bell Fired Me After I Asked for Mental Health Leave." And today we have another story about how Bell might not be practicing what it preaches when it comes to mental health. But before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about why we keep doing these stories. It's not like Bell is alone in having issues when it comes to employee mental health. Lots of companies can be criticized for that. The initial reason why we singled Bell out is because those stories were about Bell Media, and media is our focus. But as you'll hear, today's story has nothing to do with Bell Media. It has to do with CSR, Corporate Social Responsibility. That is a trendy slogan these days among the biggest companies in the world. It's actually more than a slogan. To some, it's an ethos, a practice. Some even call it a movement. It's become a multi-billion dollar industry unto itself. There's nothing particularly new about companies donating money to charity, and there's nothing new about them trying to look good by doing so. But over the last couple of decades, many companies have figured out how to fully integrate their PR goals, their advertising, their marketing, their very brands with their CSR missions. Ideally, corporate social responsibility would have companies tying their profits to their ethics, competing with each other to see who could do the most good, and diverting vast sums of otherwise private profits into good works that benefit everybody. But in practice, CSR can have the opposite effect, simply distracting the public from the socially irresponsible practices of corporations. The same companies that make billions doing harm can spend millions and look like heroes. At its worst, CSR is just a lie that protects companies from public outrage and the consequences of public outrage, namely taxation and regulation. For years, Volkswagen's CSR narrative was environmentalism. Their slogan was clean diesel, and Volkswagen boasted of vehicles that emit 90% lower emissions than gasoline cars. How much cover did that narrative give Volkswagen for the fact that in reality, its cars were spewing out 4,000% more nitrogen oxide than the legal limit? And how many more Volkswagens did they sell to environmentally conscious consumers because of that CSR campaign? When corporate social responsibility goes wrong, up is down and down is up. Hershey's isn't a company exploiting child labor in its supply chain. It's a company loudly leading the charge for fair trade chocolate and then quietly missing every target that it commits to. All too often, CSR is not about a company changing its practices. It's about a company changing its story. And that's why every corporate social responsibility campaign is a media story. Today's story is about phone calls from prison. Earlier this month, a group called the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project tweeted out, "Bell, let's talk about the prison phone contract." What followed was an expose on a little-known practice with a big impact on mental health. In 2013, Bell won a contract to handle all phone calls from Ontario prisons. The system that they installed placed major limitations on who prisoners could call. Almost every cell phone was off limits, as were most services, such as addiction hotlines. And the system put major fees on the calls the prisoners could make. Could cost up to $30 for a 20-minute call. Those fees were not paid by the prisoners, but by the people on the other end of those phone calls, the friends and families of inmates. You might think that as the client that hired Bell to manage their phone system, the Ministry of Community Safety and Correctional Services would have had every incentive to drive down the cost of communication. But instead, the ministry got a cut of Bell's revenue, in effect taxing their inmates' families. Some people have been stuck with phone bills in the thousands of dollars. And on the other end, prisoners cannot reach most people at all, and they have disincentives to communicate with the people who they can contact. The result of all that has impacts on the mental health of a lot of people, and not just prisoners. And in at least one case, it resulted in a death. My guest today, Suhail Benslimane, is a former inmate who has experienced the system firsthand. Today, he is the coordinator and co-founder of the Jail Accountability and Information Hotline, which is run by the Criminalization and Punishment Education Project. He's also the co-author of a report on Bell's prison phone contract, and he will be talking to me from his office at the University of Ottawa. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Steve Paikin, Pippa Rogers, Christian Fletcher, Jeremy Greenberg, Malik Musla, David Del Grande, Ian Boyce, and Danny.
Hello, my name is Danny and I live and work in Toronto, Ontario. I support Canada Land because I find that a lot of Canadian media is either soft on Canadian matters or heavily focused on American ones. I love how critical Canada Land is when examining the Canadian media, and it's something that we need more of.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter-like seclusion and, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
My name is Suhail Ben Sliman, and I'm the coordinator of the Jail Accountability and Information Line.
Suhail, your colleagues at the Toronto Prisoners' Rights Project, their Twitter thread went viral. They got an incredible amount of public attention and support when they recently called out Bell. Mm-hmm. Bell advocates for mental health. They do. They have this huge annual campaign, Let's Talk. And according to Toronto Prisoner Rights Project, and according to yourself and a lot of your advocacy work, there's a hypocrisy there, because while they've been advocating for mental health, they simultaneously have been, quote, destroying mental health conditions in prisons since 2013. Mm-hmm. How are they destroying mental health conditions in prisons?
For prisoners, access to a telephone is a lifeline. And the prohibitive and outdated system that is in place, that is managed by Bell Canada, prohibits prisoners from talking to their families and their loved ones. A lot of people who are incarcerated have families on the outside, and a lot of families on the outside cannot afford the price that is associated with making those phone calls from jails and prisons in Ontario. The price is very high. For a local call is $1 a call. For a long distance call, the price can go up to $30 for a 20-minute phone call. We know that a lot of people are criminalized because of mental health conditions, and folks who find themselves in that situation are further isolated by the telephone system. We know, for example, in the case of a gentleman who passed at the Ottawa Carlton Detention Center, Cleve Geddes. Cleve was someone who is living with mental illness. He experienced a mental health breakdown or distress. So what happened is that the police was called, and he was ordered to go to a mental health institution. However, given the scarce resources in Ontario, obviously we see governments gutting social services and social supports. He was supposed to go to a mental health institution, but he ended up in OCDC because they didn't have enough beds for this person to go to this institution. So while he was there, he was in segregation. While he was in segregation, he was asking to talk to his family, because that's his only supports that would alleviate. And he was begging and begging for the phone calls. His sister called the jail to talk to him. And finally, there was a guard after numerous, requests that allowed him to use the phone to talk to his sister briefly. But that wasn't enough, because the damage was already done. There were no meaningful mental health support within the human cage. It was too late. He was taken out of segregation, went back to population, and he ended up dying by suicide there. So in most extreme cases, we know that the isolation at the jails and the prisons either creates or exacerbates mental health illnesses and conditions. And the phone system is one of those factors that has a compounding effect to that isolation and exacerbates those conditions and sometimes leads to death.
Can you explain how that system works? I confess I only know what I've seen from movies and TV shows, prisoners lining up to use the phone. You mentioned that it's expensive for the recipient of the phone call, but maybe you could just tell me, in your view, what the problems are with the system and how the system itself works for making calls from prison.
Yeah, of course. So in the provincial jails, you have these telephone, they look like public telephones. So the same Bell public telephones that you see on the outside are the machines that they have inside. People have to go to those phones. They're on the range. They're usually on the living units. Depends where you are situated. If you are in segregation, you have less access to those telephones. depending which segregation you're in. At the Ottawa Carlton Detention Center, for example, sometimes people have access to that machine only 20 minutes each 2 or 3 days. So you'd have to dial a number that takes collect calls, and a number that accepts collect calls are usually landlines or pre-approved numbers. So the ministry has a common access list that allows incarcerated persons to call certain service providers, such as, for example, John Howard Society. You can call those numbers or landlines or cell phones, which have a third-party plan. So if your family, for example, know that you're incarcerated and they direly want to talk to you and they have the resources, they can take up a third-party plan and pay for it on top of their cell phone plan to allow them to accept collect calls on their cell phones. The bills are very high and you're limited to 20 minutes. Families who accept the calls are billed on a monthly basis, and those bills can range from a couple hundred dollars up to thousands of dollars a month, as we highlighted in our report, based on the bill that was shared with us by a mother of an incarcerated person who was at the Ottawa Carlton Detention Center for 3 months, innocent until proven not guilty, because all charges had been dropped in his case. And for 3 months, the woman who's living in a residential retirement home was billed $6,000 to talk to her son for 3 months.
Can I ask you to reflect on this from a personal perspective? Because you've been imprisoned. And I'm wondering, in your own experience, what were the mental health impacts of having your communications limited?
Yeah, so when I was incarcerated, I was fortunate enough to have family members who were able to assume the costs associated with talking to me. Bills ranging from $400 to $800 a month to talk to my family. And for me, those 20-minute phone calls were basically some relief from the situation what I was in. I was able to call my loved ones, call my friends, and escape the conditions of confinement for a little bit, because we have to remember that is a very stressful environment. It is very violent. You're stripped away from all the agency that you can exert, or most of it, and some things like talking to your family is where you want to express that agency. And sometimes that's weaponized as well. It's weaponized against prisoners, for example, who are in segregation, who try to access the phone call, and sometimes the prison staff refuse them because, for example, like if a person have or seem to have some quote-unquote behavioral issues or have a not-so friendly interactions with guards, some guards go out of their way and deprive those prisoners from talking to their loved ones. And even just the fact that you have to ask numerous times, and when you're in segregation, for the phone and see that right being denied, it takes a toll on you. It is very dehumanizing. When you're in segregation, sometimes you have to use the phone. When I was there, you have to use the phone from a hatch. So there's an opening in a door. So you have to kneel on your knees and stick your hand out of the hatch and dial the number you want to call. And the phone is brought in front of your cell in these carts, in these big metal carts. And then you have to talk to them through the hatch. So just the how you place those calls is also, in a way, it is very degrading. But now in segregation, it is a little bit changed. Segregation have been changed in Ontario jails. For example, they closed some of the segregation what I was in, and they turned it into those small ranges. So you have access to the phone on a living unit, so you can step out of your cell and call. However, you have the same restrictions about the price and the numbers that you can call and such.
You tell me that you were fortunate enough to have family that that could take on those costs, which must have been a huge comfort to you. Did you witness people who did not have that same comfort? Did you see firsthand the impact on people's mental health that loss of communication had?
Yeah, of course. I saw people who lost loved ones because of that. Some people who had partners on the outside but broke up with their partners because of the prohibitive and outdated telephone system. I know parents who were not able to talk to their children. You know, just the most mundane things that a human being does. For example, some woman is incarcerated and just want to feed her cats. She has cats. She was incarcerated. She has cats and she is living by herself. She basically tells us that, hey, I just want someone to go feed my cats, and I can't reach my landlord because this phone system is dysfunctional. I can't reach my partner, and we'll have to basically facilitate that. So call her landlord, call her partner, and coordinate that her partner goes to the landlord, picks up the keys, and then goes. You know, it's a lot of coordination that has to take place. And I tell you, like, also, like, from the family perspective, I saw a lot of families coordinating calls for their loved ones from inside became like a job, like a part-time job. You have your loved one inside who's calling you about every single task that like a regular human being who's outside of the walls have to do. Like, for example, paying their taxes, calling their bank, paying their mortgages. You know, it becomes like a part-time job for their loved ones on the inside, on the outside. If people had access to a meaningful way to maybe complete those tasks that they have to do in order to live their lives normally, they wouldn't take up so much of the time of their loved ones on the outside, and that creates a lot of tensions. So, you know, the idea that in Canada we go to prison as punishment, nor for punishment, is a myth. We go to prison for punishment. We're punished day and night, and that's what happens. And the telephone system is a compounding system that does not make life of prisoners and their families easier.
I don't know what the etiquette is, but I have to ask you questions that I know my listener wants to know and that I'm curious about. Are you comfortable talking about why you were in prison?
Oh, yeah, of course. I was in prison a couple of times. I was in jail, provincial jail for trafficking drugs. And then I was there for an assault. And then I came back on some gun-related charges.
There are people who are going to say to all of the things you describe, yeah, you don't have the same freedom as people who are free. That's because it's jail. And you went to jail, you went to prison for serious things. And the point of prison is not that you should feel great and have everything that everybody else has. And there are more important things than making sure that we put resources and the government takes on the costs associated and that there are other people out there who are more worthy of resources and consideration for their well-being, their health in every way, and that prison's not supposed to be comfortable, and you say it's dehumanizing. Well, that's kind of the point. You're removed from your freedoms because because of what you've done. That's something that I think is a fairly popular feeling about these, about prisoner rights issues in general. I'm wondering if you could respond to that.
Yeah, that's a fair question. You know, what I have to say to that is, first of all, no one deserves to be dehumanized. Whatever they do, everyone should be held accountable. I agree. However, the systems that we have in place at the moment to hold people accountable, first of all, don't work. They cost taxpayers a lot of money, and they're ineffective, and they are state violence. So what we do, For example, I assaulted someone. So what does the state do is assault me in return. Do you think that violence solves violence? That's what the kind of communities we want to create? Or we want to create communities that foster care and support each other when there is people who slip up? So me, I just think it's about what kind of communities we want to foster or what kind of communities we want to create. And if we think, you know, when someone makes a mistake that we have all the rights to dehumanize them, to beat them, to give them food that is inedible, making them starve in prisons, I think that's not fair. That's not the kind of society I would like to live in. I would like to live in a fair society that is also empathic and takes people's hands when they need them and not relegate them to the fringes more than they are relegated to. Already, most people who end up in jail are people who are already marginalized. And quite frankly, when I was incarcerated in the beginning, I was incarcerated for very small things like discharge of a pellet gun, possession of marijuana. And then what happens is when you put kids who are teenagers or who are just young adults through the system, you're not saving them. You're not engaging in zero rehabilitation. What you're doing is that you're putting kids through a system that is going to make them worse than they came in. Most of kids, when they come through the system, if they are coming with a possession charge, later down the road, they'll be coming back for an attempted murder. And I see that over happening over and over again. We're losing our future to the prisons and the jails, and we have to do something about it. Can I add something very quickly? It is shown by sociological studies that people who keep in touch with their families and the loved ones are less likely to re-engage in the same behaviors that brought them to jails and prison in the first place. So basically, the government every year pays $85,000 to keep people incarcerated in provincial jails and prisons in Ontario. If we assume the cost of telecommunication, we automatically reduce the chances of people re-engaging in the same behaviors that led us as Ontarians to pay $85,000 a year. So if we pay less now for a free, cost-free telecommunication system for prisoners, we're going to reap greater benefits. But if we decide to keep this a cost-based system, we're going to ensure that we are going to pay more. So we either pay less now or pay more later.
$85,000 a year per prisoner. Following Cleve Getty's death, the coroner's inquest in 2018 recommended fixing this phone system. So it was recognized that this was broken and had to be fixed. Did Bell implement that recommendation?
There are dozens and dozens of coroner's inquest recommendations that go unresolved. Most of them, I would say, by the Ministry of the Solicitor General or by Bell Canada. But mostly by the Ministry of Solicitor General. Anyways, those requests are basically fall on deaf ears. It's not surprising that there were no changes after the inquest into the death in custody of Cleve Geddes. Maybe now the ministry want to do something about it when they announce that they are going to make the price more reasonable. However, we hear from prisoners at the jail hotline that even if the government makes the price of telecommunication more affordable or more reasonable in their own term, they are not going to be able to afford it because people inside don't have access to jobs, can't work, and if they provide them with virtual calling cards, people can't afford it still. And this is confirmed by incarcerated people.
What's the jail hotline?
The jail hotline is a community initiative that takes calls from the Ottawa Carlton Detention Center, which is the Ottawa jail. We are a community initiative that has two components. One of them is accountability, the other one is information. The accountability components is the part of the hotline that works in solidarity with incarcerated people in order to bring some accountability to the system. And the information part of the line is a very broad description. At the hotline, we work with law students and lawyers in order to provide legal information for incarcerated people. We support some folks in certain legal procedures that they're undergoing. We provide people with other information that they can access because they have no access to internet. We also hope to keep families connected and keep people who are incarcerated connected to service providers in the outside, such as lawyers, such as bail houses, bail programs, mental health support, indigenous service providers, and the like.
Okay, so the picture you're painting is sad, and I'm convinced that there's a mental health issue there. Why is that Bell's fault? I mean, the restrictions on prisoners' freedom, my mind would go immediately to the prison, right, or to the ministry. Why would Bell be the one to point a finger at in this case?
First of all, because Bell is profiting from that. They're making money. They're not doing this benevolently, installing a system in a jail. There was a process by which there was some bidding. They bid on the project when the ministry put it forward. And it's not the fault of Bell only. There is a couple actors who are complicit. Bell they're making money out of this project, and they are giving kickbacks to the Ministry of the Solicitor General. The Ministry of the Solicitor General have even a greater responsibility than Bell Canada to ensure that people under their quote-unquote care are served in an effective and meaningful way. And the other body that is also complicit in this, maybe knowingly, is the CRTC, because the CRTC are the body that approves long-distance rates. And the CRTC, they approved the long-distance rate that Bell Canada is using to charge incarcerated persons' families these huge thousands of dollars bills.
Is this just profiteering? Like, when I think about, like, phone calls, even long distance, like, it's basically, there's no reason why long distance should cost more than local calls. There's no, like, collect calls is the least efficient, most expensive way. Nobody makes collect calls anymore. Government wants contracts with private sector that are efficient and are not expensive. So the only reason why I can imagine a collect call system being the system is because the ministry gets a percentage of what Bell gets. So it does seem like an alliance to make money off of some very vulnerable people.
Yeah, so we know that there is the existence of the prison industrial complex. So the prison industrial complex is the ways in which corporations and are in, you know, collusion with the governments in order to reap profits out of the plight that incarcerated persons and criminalized people face in what is known as Canada or in the United States or everywhere. So the ministry, I think, there with the amount of resources that they have, they probably can come up with a better analysis than a couple people from the university were able to. The conclusion that a couple people from the university were able to come to. And I think that the ministry was not unaware that there are families who pay thousands of dollars a month to stay in contact with their family. I'm not sure if they did that on purpose or not, but it sounds like and it looks like they have done that on purpose to some point, especially when you read the contract between them and Bell Canada and you see that they are receiving kickbacks in the process. It's hard, you know, not to say that it is on purpose that this gouging have been happening. And now the ministry is coming out and saying basically like, after efforts of prisoners for decades probably and their families, and now with some advocates mounting pressures from different advocates here in Ontario, they came out and say, we're going to change the price and we're going to make it more reasonable. In 2020, they're going to make the price of telecommunication more reasonable in jails, and they're going to allow for some international telecommunications. We see that as a piecemeal solution. It's not going to bring any real benefits to the phone system that we have at the moment. And companies are still going to be turning a profit from offering telecommunication within the jails.
What ultimately is your message to Bell? What do you have to say to Bell for looking good on mental health and trying to encourage people to take it seriously and give money to it? And have conversations about it while they themselves, in your view, are having such a destructive and profiteering on basically the backs of people's mental illness.
I think that Bell Canada has to reconsider their approach to prison telecommunications. They have to sit down with their accomplice, the Ministry of the Solicitor General, and tell them that they have to make telecommunication cost-free, at least take up that position publicly, make telecommunication cost-free, increase or eliminate the 20-minute mark, and allow people to call cell phones and landlines, any cell phone or any landline in Canada. I think that's their position. If they want to be real champions of mental health, they cannot discriminate who they're going to champion the cause for. I think that that's their step. And I think that the ministry have also like a great responsibility on Bell Let's Talk Day or going forward until the contract is renewed to make telecommunication cost-free for prisoners and their families.
Sahel, thank you.
No worries. Take care.
We sent a series of questions to Bell asking them about this. We asked them why they didn't change their phone system, as the coroner's inquest into Cleve Getty's death recommended that they do. We also asked them what their response was in general to the criticism that they have received regarding their prison phone system and why they have not changed it. They sent us the following response. The terms of service in our contract with the Government of Ontario were specified by the Ministry in 2013. The contract expires in June, and we have submitted a new proposal in response to the current government's request. We couldn't comment further about this or any of our other business contracts, other than the rates for operated assisted calls in Ontario correctional facilities are the same as Bell's public rates. That's your Canada Land episode. If you liked it, you can do something about that. You don't have to let that enjoyment of the episode live and die in your own head and existence. You can rate the show on Apple Podcasts or somewhere else, or, you know, like just tell somebody that you like the show somewhere, and then maybe we'll have another listener, and that would be good. You can email me about it at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read everything you send. We're on Twitter at Canada Land. We have a website, CanadaLandShow.com. We post original news reporting there. And we also have a new episode of Oppo with Jen Gerson and her co-host this winter, Sandy Garasino. If you missed the first episode, it's not too late. This is a fantastic pairing, and I learned a lot. Check out Oppo this week. This episode was produced by Tiffany Lamb. Kasia Mihailovich is our senior producer. Our managing editor is Kevin Sexton, and syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like the podcasts that we make, this one or any of the other ones, if you want to get ad-free versions of all of them, if you want to help support independent journalism in Canada, you can do all that by going to patreon.com/CanadaLand. I hope that you do.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.